Divorce doesn't just affect the parents and children involved. From coworkers and employees to friends, neighbors, and spouses, the toxic fallout of divorce and years of mismanaged conflict can touch us all over North Carolina and America, changing the way we approach the world. Ashley Nicole Russell believes in a better way forward. Drawing on her personal and professional experience, Ashley Nicole is changing the conversation around divorce and conflict resolution as a whole, providing thoughtful insight into this culture of conflict and the statistical effect on children and adults while offering collaborative strategies at home and in the workplace. It's time to find a better way forward, both individually and as a community of people across America, here on Divorce Healthy.
It's season three. Yes. Announcement, season three, Divorce Healthy Podcast. Man, I am excited. So I'm going to check back in on why we're here. What are we doing this podcast for? And I'm going to talk about kind of where we've gone from the beginning and where we're at now and some very exciting changes that have happened across the country. So this podcast has had two seasons. Whoop, whoop. Season one had 14 episodes. Season two had 12 episodes. Very excited about that. You know, I am a full-time attorney and I have a multitude of law firms across the state of North Carolina. So this is not my only job. However, I do think it's one of the most important things that I do. And the reason I'm going to season three now is I have been inspired. And this season is going to be called Life Advice from a Divorce Attorney: The Red Flags You May Have Missed. And you might be thinking that I'm talking about, clearly, since he or she cheated on their ex, I should have known that they were going to cheat on me. Or clearly, I married a narcissist. Or clearly, I should have known that they were selfish when they barely showed up for the wedding, etc. No, I'm not here to talk about all of those red flags. There are lots of books and lots of people who can talk to you about that and help you fix your picker. That would be my dear friend Bella. But, you know, I'm not here for that. And really, I don't think that's where you get the most value from me. So I do want to say, this is kind of where this started. One is that a client asked what the podcast was for. And very excited about it, listening to it, but just wondered why I decided to do that with knowing how busy I was, etc. And I immediately said off the cuff, and you know, sometimes that's when you know yourself the most, is whenever you're just asked a series of questions and you just respond and you kind of see what your own thought processes are. But my response was that I, you know, wanted to make sure that I could give people common sense advice around divorce, even if they couldn't reach me, if they couldn't physically reach me because of what state I'm in, if they couldn't be able to hire me, which this is not about legal advice, so it wouldn't be about the legal advice that you get from hiring me, but rather the advice about the process and the divorce process options and the steps along the way where you want to make good decisions and those fork in the roads where you want to choose the path that's going to get you through to the best option whenever you're going through this, because I believe, sincerely believe, that the fabric of family in the United States of America and in lots of other countries around the world, that the fabric of family is being destroyed in a large way because of the hostility, controversy, and conflict surrounding family law. And I, if you, you know, listen to some of the other podcasts, you're going to be able to see how a lot of what I do is to actually save marriages, because I want to make sure that these future generations of children are not going to be broken like I am-ish was, better now. But a lot of the things that I went through as a child and a lot of things that I see a lot of my clients go through, their children go through, in an overall perspective that I have, having been a part of this concept over the entire country and specifically very heavily involved in North Carolina, obviously, but with National Parents Organization as well, and therefore having a broader scope of what's going on in the country and how that's affected family, those long-term effects. I've researched longitudinal studies to be able to say we're at the lowest marriage rate of all of recorded history. The reproduction of children in America is not at its highest by any stretch of the imagination. The fabric of family is being affected. People do not have the same root systems that they used to have. Their identity has been shaken because of the absence of and abandonment of through the system and multitude of systems of parents, and where, you know, they're not able to really understand who they are if they don't have that whole lineage of parents, grandparents to give them such a root system and structure of identity. It's a big part of who we are as humans, and I've seen that happen. So because of that, I became very invested in collaborative family law. I became very invested in shared parenting, and then started this podcast so I could spread that information, that perspective that I have, unique perspective of being a divorce attorney, a child of divorce, and also this leader in trying to change how divorce is handled in America so that we can correct a lot of the things that have happened. That's what we do in this country. We watch when a pendulum swings too far and we correct it. And that's what I feel like my job is on this planet, is to help be a steward of correcting that pendulum swing. As a divorce attorney and having that perspective and having a multitude of law firms with all of these different practices, multi-jurisdictional practices, it allows me to kind of be able to see percentages, percentage chance of something working out, percentage chance of one thing or another. And so I have a perspective of that that I just feel like is necessary for me to share. So this life advice from a divorce attorney is really based on the things you should think about when electing a process. So I'm going to be specifically talking about processes, not going to be talking about legal rights or how anything affects you in particular. Anything that I do say, you should check with your own divorce attorney, and please do not understand that I am not your divorce attorney or any other type of attorney for anyone listening. I just have to say all that. So again, I started this because I wanted to help people understand this common sense approach. So this season is going to be a bunch of me, monologues, lots of monologues. I want to share my advice. I want to share my opinion. I want to share the things that inspire me or depress me throughout the day because of the practice and because of what happens. I want to share the things that I think can happen and the things that I think will change and the things that I think that you can do to help it change. I want to be able to share all of that with you. And so I'm here to be able to do that. Now, this series you may find is a little funny. I don't come out with an episode every single month, and I never have, and I don't come out with an episode every week, and it's very inconsistent, and it's inconsistent because I'm not doing this for money, and I'm not doing this for followers. I'm doing this just purely because I know that there is information that a lot of people don't have about a common sense perspective, and I want people to be able to have that information. Informed decision making can change the game in family law, and if I can help people make informed decisions, then I have served my purpose. Another way that I want to state and say that things are changing and that there's a lot to be proud of is that the National Parents Organization has been incredibly successful in changing the laws in 8 states in this country. There are 8 states that have gone through change in one format or another around the laws around shared parenting in this country. 8 of 50 is nothing to snuff at. So I am so impressed. I am so impressed. I am so proud to be on this journey. I am so proud to have helped to make change. Now, I am struggling in my own state to make that change. These things do not happen overnight. National Parents Organization has put a billboard in Raleigh, North Carolina. It has the grade that North Carolina was given in shared parenting. And National Parents Organization does a report card every so often of all of the 50 states. Just so people can understand, this is kind of what you're dealing with in your state. So North Carolina received a D-. So we do now have a billboard in Raleigh showing that we do have a D- right now. There is a bill on the House floor to vote for shared parenting. So the bill is in committee. You know, there's obviously a political structure to how that works. It's not available for vote now. It is maneuvering through the processes. There are other bills on the horizon as well. And that's just one state to kind of talk to you about what's going on. So collaborative and shared parenting are not the same thing. I do want to describe that. Collaborative family law is a process that you choose in order to stay out of court where both attorneys are not allowed to take you to litigation. And the goal is to help the parents to brainstorm and come up with the best interest of them and their children in a finalized separation agreement and property settlement. Shared parenting is an effort to say that whenever two people separate, that it automatically is 50-50 custody of the children until someone goes to court. That just sets a standard until you're able to get to court. Right now in North Carolina, both parents have 100% custody of the child. So that is problematic because it creates a very scary time where one parent thinks the other parent could take the child out of state to another country, etc. And so that's the reason that we have the shared parenting laws, is to say there's a baseline of what we need to establish until people can get into court. It takes a long time to get into court. Sometimes it's not very helpful to be able to say they're not going to be able to have any determination until they're able to get into court. And what if that court date is not for 9 months? You know, what happens in that interim time? Or what if two people don't want to go to court and they really just want to settle outside of court? What happens until they finalize settlement? So that I want to clarify. National Parents Organization is about the reform of shared parenting across the country. The collaborative movement is about the reform of settling outside of court being a known option to people outside of the country so that the practice of family law can be more transparent, can be more based on the needs of the clients, and can be more transformational so that while these people are going through this, they can develop a system to become good co-parents or to become a better version of themselves, so that the divorce itself does not nullify the next 5 to 10 to 20 years of their life to where they're so broken from the divorce that they feel like they can't be contributing members of society, etc. So there's a difference there. I support both of those missions, and it's very important to me to successfully bring both of those missions to fruition. The shared parenting movement is going great. The collaborative movement is going great. There are more and more collaborative practitioners straight out of law school. I just received a review from one of the interns. We have a very developed internship program at my firm to where, you know, students are able to come in as college students or law clerks and to be able to really grow and understand how a firm operates, and also to be able to expose people to how collaborative works so that more people going through college and law school understand collaborative and understand that perspective as well when they're choosing which area they want to go into. And so one of the interns recently sent an email after her internship and said she had decided she wanted to become a collaborative family law attorney. That is amazing. That's what we're trying to do. And collaborative family law is now being offered. You know, a class on settlement dispute, alternative dispute resolutions are offered at a lot of law schools now. There are a lot of attorneys who get trained in collaborative and are specifically collaborative attorneys. Really, the definition of a collaborative attorney is someone who does not do litigation and chooses to only do collaborative and has been trained. And so that is the definition for NCCAN in North Carolina, which is, you know, the North Carolina Collaborative Attorney Network. There is no statutory definition of what a collaborative attorney is in the statute that was written in North Carolina, but there is a definition of what collaborative law is in North Carolina. So just I wanted to kind of round out a lot of those concepts, because sometimes, you know, as a host, I assume that you may know one definition or another. And I just want to start to break it all down from the beginning of what this podcast is for and what my mission is. So I want to share common sense perspectives around shared parenting and around collaborative family law and around the divorce process in general, so that you can understand maybe how to avoid the red flags, or if you've already breezed right through that red flag, to turn around, see it, and know how to avoid the red flag in the future. So those are the points and the purpose. Now we kind of understand this next season, we're going to go through with me, specifically with you on your drive or wherever you're at, talking with you and going over these common sense perspectives so that you can take this into your daily life and that you can just hear this and have heard it. That way, I feel like I'm still furthering the mission, and hopefully you can help me further that mission as well. So I want to be clear that a divorce does not have to destroy you. It is possible to do that with dignity, but it starts from the very beginning that you start to think about even going down that road. So marriage is a journey. It is a very intense journey. There are two people trying to do the best for one another, and with tendencies to be selfish and self-focused, and to try every day to think about the other person and to put yourself as an equal with that person and to go through life as if the two of you are one person. It's not an easy task. It's never been said that it was going to be easy, an easy task. No one ever has ever said it was going to be an easy task, except for Disney. Disney probably said it was going to be an easy task. I did put that in the book, but it's not. You know, just one listen through Adele's album post-divorce. And by the way, I did call out that she was going to get divorced in the book, The Cure for Divorce Culture. Just want to just state that. But it, just because she's a child of divorce and what had happened in her life and statistically and that type of thing. But in her album, if you listen to it, a big sense of that album is go easy on me. I really didn't have the tools because when I was a child of divorce, I wasn't taught how to do this. I didn't understand how to do this. And this has been very difficult. So when there's a task of marriage and that's already difficult, and then you add on to that having no understanding of having seen an appropriate model of how that actually works, commitment from your childhood, then the likelihood of you not being successful at marriage is high just based on the statistics. But the process where you make that decision, which I 100% understand, I am divorced. I know marriage is difficult. I am remarried. All marriages are difficult. And so if it gets to a point where you understand, you know, we are no longer good for each other. We are toxic for one another. We cannot continue down this road. Or somebody does something that's so detrimental to the relationship that you can't continue forward. All of those reasons are, there are very valid reasons to get divorced. There are even extreme reasons to get divorced. But all of those reasons still can end up in the same place. And that place can be settlement. And there are thought processes around domestic violence situations and all of that. And we want to be very careful. We want to make sure that everybody is safe and secure. But it is still possible for every situation to reach a resolution outside of court, if both parties are committed to it. Now, it cannot happen if just one person is committed to it. And that is a big reason why a lot of people don't find themselves there, is that it's hard enough to make sure one person can make an informed decision. It's even harder to get enough information out about these processes that are available that are largely underrepresented in family law by attorneys. They don't really talk about these processes a lot. And they're not necessarily required to, even though they are, attorneys are required to explain to you all of the options. The problem comes where both parties are not equally yoked in understanding of what other court processes there are or out-of-court processes there are, and then one person chooses litigation, and then that's where you are. You can't necessarily back out of litigation unless someone files a collaborative participation, which is under statute in some states, or unless one or both part, or unless both parties decide that they want to exit from litigation, dismiss, and finalize outside of court. And that, like I said, is rare. So in order to know what to do or what the process options are, or for there to be even a chance of you being able to choose an out-of-court process, you have to be informed about what your decisions are and what decisions you can make and how many different process options there are available to you. And to have both people aware of that is not easy. So again, that is what we're trying to do. It's to help you to be able to hear that. If you know someone going through this, to be able to say to them, you know, I've heard that there are lots of process options. You can look into this information to see if that is relevant to you. The point being to help someone make an informed decision that will help to prevent the destruction of their life and the maintenance of their dignity through the process. The other reason to make all these informed decisions and to have this information to make an informed decision is because this comes down to mathematics. This comes down to a risk analysis. This comes down to a financial analysis. We're talking about your family and your children and your babies, but we're also talking about your finances. And so a piece of this has to be a financial determination based on analysis, a risk analysis, an amount of money you're going to be spending, how you're going to spend it, where's the money coming from analysis. And I'm going to go through all of those in the next episode. It is going to be more based on the financial aspect of it. So just to kind of tease that, what we're going to be talking about in that episode is, you know, if you're making a decision to take retirement funds, or if you're making a decision to take college funds, or if you're doing this or if you're doing that, things you should look out for in the process to be able to ask your attorney, ask your financial advisor questions that you should be looking for, red flags there. So that'll be in the next episode. An additional episode, we will go through what happens with children and when you're going through these processes, what happens when you can make a decision based on an analysis of, if I go through this process, it's going to cost me this, versus if I go through this process, it's going to cost me this, versus if I go through this process, it's going to cost me this. And then what success those different things have had in actually reaching resolution. So we're going to go through those statistics and go through those understandings. And then also the time value of money analysis. So what all you're investing right now, would, if you had had that money, or if you didn't get involved in a process that was protracted, what does that money mean for you in 10 to 15 years, or what could it have meant to you? And are you analyzing that as well? The analysis of reading what is in front of you. A lot of times people in this system expect an attorney to stand in for you and be you, to make every decision for you. And I want to explain the roles right now about how that works. So as an attorney, we are public servants. We are public servants to guide and shepherd the community on the law. So we go to school so that we can understand the law, understand the policy behind the law, understand the statutes, understand the local ordinances, and understand the case law, and understand how all of those things create the rules that we are all supposed to abide by in the country. If there is a criminal issue, a criminal attorney is either going to represent the state or represent the defendant to create due process for the defendant side to make sure that the Constitution is followed, and also to make sure that we maintain civility and harmony and peace in our country to protect the state's rights. In civil law, you are damaged by another individual and you are trying to be made whole based on the local ordinances, the general statutes in the state, and the case law. That is based on more of an economical perspective, or a fairness perspective, a justice perspective around civil issues. Divorce didn't exist until it existed. And when it did begin to exist, it had to fall in one or the other context, because issues around children, which is maintained by the welfare of the children, is maintained by the state. And then issues around financial, which is governed by the state, how financial accounts are moved or dissected and what happens and the tax consequences. And so the states and the federal government started to kind of recognize that the family was also going to have to be able to go to court and ask for a resolution. Now, the federal government itself never enacted a law that governs everything around the state, except for that each of the states individually have to recognize the marriage laws of the other states. So if someone is married or unmarried, they have to recognize that. So that plays into that the states have control over marriage and divorce. So then the federal government has not made that determination. So then the state governments control that. The state, each individual state has its own laws around marriage and divorce. And so the laws are different and they had to be enacted and they had to then be ratified and changed based on the change in marriage in the country and then also the change in divorce in the country. And so all of those laws became complex. And then attorneys who are public servants were asked to step into the realm of family law to help people to represent their interests so that a judge could make a decision for two people who could not come to a decision on their own. So let's recap. Stop right there. The initial way that you did this is two people sat at their kitchen table and figured out okay, if we're going to move on from one another, then, you know, I'm going to take this and you're going to take that, and I'm going to take this and you're going to take that. And then when there was a conflict, the attorneys had to come in to deal with that. Now, one other caveat I want to say is, based on the women's rights movement, before, in many states, women were technically property. So that was not something that you had a right to go up against the other person, because technically you were considered property. And then after that, women could only ask for a divorce if their husband had cheated or if they had been abused. And then the only other option was if your husband died, you were a widow. And so a lot of that played into the initial difference in why there was conflict outside of people just saying, okay, we don't agree. So now that we don't agree, who helps us decide? So the reality is, you built all the retirement accounts, the stock portfolio, the different houses that you've purchased together. If you're leasing properties, the leases that you have, the family business that you have, the business that you started, the individual college funds that you've started for your children, their vehicles, you did all of that in an effort to build for your family, to produce for your family, to create a legacy for yourself, to be able to protect your children. That is why you did all of those things. But you were being forced into the same system as someone who elected to start a business and that business fell out, and those two people need to go to court to decide who gets what assets and what needs to be sold off. You're being put under the same rules of civil procedure for the context that wasn't started for family law. So family law was put into a system that already existed, civil law, and it is obeying civil procedure, but also creating its own modifications of that in some areas called family court. So family court did not exist outright. There was a district court where you have criminal and civil stuff that's below a certain dollar figure. And then there was superior court where you had felony and stuff that was above a certain dollar figure. And now there's family court in some areas, but other areas don't have family court. Within a state, each local county governs exactly how family court is or is not in existence and how it is run. Each local county decides the rules for family court. So, to recap, the initial way that this worked was that two people who were getting a divorce and needed to divide property could not agree on how they wanted to do that, and so they went to attorneys to help them figure that out. And then also, in order to get a divorce, they had to get divorced. So there are two things that happen. In order to get a divorce, you have to have the court to interact for you. But in order to divide your property, and in order especially to parent your children, you do not have to have a court order to parent your children initially, when when you're first starting down this road. When you look at the other person and the two of you say, we are no longer going to be married to each other, you can elect to talk through what you need, to turn that into a legally binding document, and to figure out how you want to parent your children, and to withhold that under your own power. If you elect to go to court, then you are saying, I do not want to make this decision myself. I do not have enough information to make this decision myself. I need someone else to make this decision for me. Now, if you have been served, then you are going to court because you have been pulled into court. You did not elect to go into court. So I am only talking about the people who walk into court to file a complaint, either through their attorney or through themselves. That decision to do that should be a well thought out decision as to what the next 5 years is going to look like. If you are filing a complaint, you need to understand what the next 5 years is going to look like. And again, I'm talking about a complaint for property and for your children. A complaint for divorce is almost mandatory in every single state, I think, in order to have a vital records formality. There is a difference between being married and being divorced and the state being able to say to other states, this person is married or they are not married. That is a vital records formality. And to be able to track death records and things like that, are you married? Are you unmarried? That is different than your property and your children and asking the court to make decisions on these things. Almost every state has two separate tracks for these two things. In North Carolina, you can do an uncontested divorce. That means you're saying, I do not contest the fact that we both want to get divorced. Now, I may want to contest the fact that we have property and that we have children, and there are all these other things that I can do there, but I may not be saying I want to contest the fact that this marriage is going to end. That's an uncontested divorce. That can still proceed and end, and you can still be dealing with property and children. So, process option description alone. Please check with your attorney as to if you have to have a separation agreement and property settlement or a court order, either a contract or a court order, in order to divide your property and your children. Or if it is possible for you to not have to do that, and in order for you to either parent your children because you already agree on your own, or through something outside of court, which would be a contract, or if it's necessary in your state for you to go to court. And then also research what you're being told, because you need to understand what is happening. Then you need to read the pleadings that are in front of you and any order that you're signing or any consent order. Again, your attorney is there to be a steward. If the attorney is making decisions for you or telling you you can or cannot make decisions, that is inappropriate. That is not how an attorney is supposed to guide a client. We are public servants. We are here to give you advice. And at the end of the day, the client is supposed to make the decision. That is the law in North Carolina. That is my understanding of the role of every attorney in every state. However, please do make sure that you check your own local state laws for everything that I'm talking about. So in general, there are two tracks: the divorce, either divorced or not, married or not, separated or not, and then property division and children. If you understand the difference between those two, you can start to understand the difference in how you want to approach it. If you are with an attorney and the attorney says, I'm going to destroy that person on the stand, and that person is your ex, I want you to understand that everything has an equal and opposite reaction. That is the law of physics. So if they are saying that they're going to do that, please note that the attorney that your spouse hires will then have to do what to you on the stand in order to have the same trial from both sides. They would then have to destroy you on the stand. So if your attorney is saying that up front in your consult, then what you would understand from that is that your attorney is already governed that way. And all of the other attorneys that deal with that attorney know the strategy that that attorney uses. Please also understand that the attorney does not change the strategy in most cases to fit you. You choose an attorney's strategy that you want used for your case. So if you are saying to the attorney, I want to be very fair and reasonable, I want to settle, and the attorney is saying, well, we can do settlement negotiation, but we can't do collaborative, or we can give a settlement offer, but we can't do mediation, or I can't agree to not represent you in court, or we can destroy them on the stand if this doesn't work out, then that attorney is not, their practice is set up to be successful in litigation. Their practice is not set up to be successful in settlement. So if you come at a case wanting to exact and extract everything that you can from the other side, then know that the other side can only do the same in order for that to be an even game in court. Okay? So that's an understanding there about the role of the attorney and the role that this plays. And when you're talking to an attorney and whenever you're meeting with an attorney, in your own role that you're playing. So please do not blame the attorney for being aggressive when you elected to hire the attorney's aggression. The attorney is here to advise. And at the end of the day, you make the decision. At the end of the day, you want them to be your attorney or not. At the end of the day, you hire someone else or you keep them. Those are all decisions that you make. Now, I understand you may be in a small town. There may be a very limited number of attorneys. There are generally other attorneys who can help you outside of that town in different towns. So look to other towns to see if you can find someone. Also, you need to be looking at what is happening in your case. You are the decision maker. You are still captaining the ship. You have hired an attorney so that attorney can advise you on the law and the process options that are available to you, but you are still the person making the decisions. If you don't make the decisions, then that creates a whole nother issue. And so it's really important that you stay in the driver's seat so that you know how much money you're spending, you know how long this is going to take, and you are aware of what's going on. Look at the dates. If you are being sent a motion in response to another motion, did your attorney file the motion first or did you file your response first? Get a copy of what's going on in your case. Keep very in touch with your attorney. I want a copy of that, please. I did not receive a copy of that, please. You were supposed to be CC'd on all communication. If you did not receive a copy of it, please ask so that you can see. Any attorney should not have a problem being transparent with you. This is not saying that you need to be harassing your attorney. This is saying that, or that you need to be questioning your attorney. This is just saying you need to be aware of how your case is proceeding because the attorney is going to use the practice that they have developed. And they expect that if you're coming to them, that you are seeking the practice they have developed because you are asking for our advice. I get paid every day to give my opinion. So if you are coming to ask my opinion, I am assuming that you looked into the fact that I know what I'm talking about on that topic so that you can come ask my opinion. That is the point. So I think a big problem in family law is really not that the attorneys are driving people into litigation. That is in some ways happening in some areas. I'm not here to call out the industry in that specific way. But another thing that's happening is an attorney is developing a practice and a strategy, and then people are coming and feeding that strategy and choosing that strategy, misunderstanding that they are supposed to do that. They are supposed to go to war. They need a bulldog attorney. They've been told from someone else that that's what they have to do. Or misunderstanding that they are only supposed to follow what the attorney tells them to do, not that they are in any other way able to make a decision themselves, but you are. I expect that I am going to tell my clients all the different options that are available to them, and then the client is going to make the decision. I am not here to make the decision. I am here to give advice and to say these are your options, and to, at the end of the day, allow for the client to make the decision. That is the most important part of the process, and it is very important for how it works in our process for an attorney and how they see what's going on, so that you can understand what we're thinking and how we understand and analyze this. So to kind of stop there and to encapsulate for you what I'm saying. Attorneys were started in this profession as public servants. You should feel like your attorney is a public servant. If you don't feel that way, you should think about the fact that you're hiring someone for a purpose. And if you've hired them for a purpose different than what they think you've hired them for, you need to understand that and you need to have a conversation with them. You are the decision maker in your divorce. At the end of the day, how could an attorney possibly know more about your children than you do? How could an attorney possibly know more about how to parent your children than you do? How could they know more about how your family life functions than you do? They are there to give you advice on what the law is in family law and to tell you what process options are available to you and to tell you how to meet your needs. So if your need is to destroy the other side, then they are going to help you meet that need because that is what you're coming to ask them to do. But if your need is to preserve the other side and your side for the goal of your children so that they can have a balanced, healthy, respectful life, go on to get married themselves and have a healthy relationship and be a contributing member of society, then you need to hire an attorney that is there to help you meet your goal. The red flags should be evident because they should be in contrast to what your personality is. Now, if you married someone that has a personality that they are very aggressive and they are going to go for the throat in metaphor, then that's not something you can control. If they decide to hire an attorney to do that, the thing that you can do is help them make an informed decision based on the parenting relationship that you have. You should not expect that relationship is severed until it is. If you expect that it's severed up front, it will become severed. But if that person hires an aggressive attorney, and you seem to have known the reputation of that attorney, you can ask them, I'm confused as to why you hired this person. That person generally uses this strategy. I would think we would be using a healthy strategy, a non-court strategy, whatever strategy. I found these people. We had talked about in the past that we were going to do this. Can you talk to me about our parenting relationship and how you expect that to go? How do you expect this divorce to proceed? Have conversations with that person that are civil. Do not be aggressive. If someone's being aggressive to you, cut the conversation off and have boundaries. But you should be able to talk to the other person until that is not working or creating too much drama. But you shouldn't automatically cut it off. If you expect that the only person giving your spouse advice is going to be their divorce attorney and they're going to be giving the advice that's going to be helpful to you and your kids, that's a red flag for you to think that. The attorney is going to be giving advice based on whatever they've been asked to do by your spouse. That may or may not be what's in the best interest of you or your children. So if you want your spouse to hear that perspective, then either you or a family member should be giving it to them and not expecting that the divorce attorney that they've hired to represent their own interest is going to be looking out for your interest or your children's interest. That's not what they were hired for. They were hired to help your spouse get to the best interest of the children based on what they think. That's it. The attorney is not the decision maker. The client is the decision maker. Now, there are problematic situations where an attorney will say, either you follow exactly what I do, or I'm not going to have you as a client. Let me explain what the actual code for us says. It says that we must give advice to the client as to the appropriate measure they should take. And if the client does not take that advice, we have the election to terminate our services. That is very different than my previous statement. So please think about that and think about what you think is supposed to happen and what you want to happen versus what your attorney is saying is supposed to happen. And if you don't want that result or you don't want the process at which they're going about it or you read a pleading and you don't want that information included, then you have to have a conversation with your attorney about what you do and do not want. If they do not think that you are following their advice and do not want to represent you anymore, then that is a difference of your own opinion and character versus theirs, which is fine. That's what I think starts to scare people. They think, I am not able to make these decisions. I need someone to make them for me. But then what are you going to do when you're not paying the attorney anymore? And then how do you get upset about what your legal fees are if you're the person deciding that you're not capable of making those decisions anymore and the only person that can make them is your attorney and so your bill is going crazy because you're not able to make a decision for yourself or just take the advice and apply it to your own life. A lot of that is a lot to take in. And I'm here so that you can see a role definition and the definition of boundaries. If you want to be aggressive, then an aggressive result is what you're going to get and what the other side must implement. If you want to be commonsensical, then you can be commonsensical until it's detrimental to you. You should not automatically assume that you cannot be commonsensical unless you are being given an indication that you cannot. Someone filing to go to litigation means that common sense is done and that litigation has started. Common sense and settlement is outside of the walls of litigation. Litigation is a different approach. It does not make common sense to think that you should go in front of anyone for a week or even 2 weeks and describe your entire life with your children over the past 7, 14, 18, 24 years and let that person make a good decision for you. That is not common sense. That is litigation. The judges will tell you when you come in, I cannot possibly know all the information I need to know. I'm going to do the best I can with the information that's given to me. That is given to me within the rules of civil procedure. That is a procedure that was built for business and for people who have been damaged in relationships that are not codified by a family. That is how that started. That is how the rules of civil procedure were created. They were created for a different type of case, but those are going to be placed on your case, and you're asking a person under those rules and under limited information to make a decision about your children and all of your finances. That is not common sense. When you get to the attorney's bench, they think you both are bad parents because you're here asking me to make this decision and you couldn't over the past year, 2 years, 6 months, come up with a plan that's going to work for your child. Most people are confused. They think they're going in for a popularity contest to describe how they're the better parent, but you're not. You're going in to describe how the other parent is a bad parent and you are the only parent. When you go into litigation, it is very uncommon for you to be litigating if you're asking for joint custody. You either had to ask for sole custody or some unproportional time, or the other person is asking for sole or some unproportional time. If you both ask for joint custody, you don't get to litigation. Does that make sense? This is not the way that most people look at this is completely different. Litigation is not a common sense decision-making platform. It is the opposite of that. It is saying, I could not use common sense with my spouse, parent of my child, mother, father of my child, or about our finances with the help of our financial advisor. We could not make a decision. So we need you under very limited information and only based on what my attorney is able to tell you under the rules of civil procedure and the local rules of this county that govern what I can even tell you and present to you to make a decision about my children and my finances. The judge does not come to your doorstep and ask you to let him make that decision or her make that decision. You go to the judge's doorstep and ask him or her to make that decision. Or if you're drug into court, then you're the other person that you were married to made that decision, and nowhere along the way could you have a settlement or common sense discussion with that person in order to be able to come to a resolution. And at that point, two people who are not you have to represent what your story is to someone who is not you or has never met you or had any personal relationship with you to make an independent decision about that. That is the true essence of litigation. You have left common sense when you get there. Now, you can still have common sense in your own approach to how you handle that. If the other side is going motion crazy, motion after motion after motion, you can still have common sense conversations with your attorney directly about how that's going to affect you monetarily and what the next step would be and how that would affect you monetarily and what another option would be and how that would affect you monetarily to decide with this motion after motion after motion. Do you want to take a previous settlement offer? Do you want to offer a settlement offer? What is it that you want to do in your own life? And in any way that you can, continue to communicate with your spouse about how to run your household appropriately. I'm not saying that you ever need to make a decision outside of the counsel of your attorney. The entire point of your attorney is that you are supposed to run any decision that you want to make by them to get their counsel. You should not make it independently once you have hired them. That does not mean that they are the only person who can make the decision. You can make it, you just need to have their advice, which means that you can talk to the other side in a calm, very calm way. Please do make sure you check with your attorney that to make sure that you don't have a domestic violence protective order that would prevent you from talking to the other side. But you can talk to the other side in a common sense way, if you have checked with your attorney about the DVPO, if you're confused or don't know if there's, for some reason, you may not be able to contact the other side, about what is going to be common sense for your independent family relationship, how the procedure of your family is going to work, how you're going to run the family. You should be checking in with them. You should be having conversations with them. It is good for your children, for the two of you to talk in a respectful manner so that they can see that. And they can see that the other person doesn't just fail to exist to you, or that the other person isn't just the worst person on the entire planet to you, because they only see that as themselves. Every child sees themselves as a compilation of their parents. They see everything about their parents that's similar to them in the mirror every time they look in it. That's just part of life. It's who we are as humans. We think that way. So make sure that you're checking the lane that you're in and the lane that your attorney is in, and you're being appropriate with your boundaries. Make sure that you're being appropriate with your boundaries for yourself. Take care of yourself. Read the information that is being given to you. Invest in yourself during this time. Think through what you're doing during this time. Be aware during this time. Be invested in yourself during this time. Be thinking about what red flags you should be picking up on. Be thinking about the character of yourself, the character of your attorney, who you want to be. Who do you want to model for your children? What do you want them to see over the next 4 years? What do you want them to do if they're going to be getting a divorce? Think from a 50,000-foot view, not a 5-foot view. Pull back. Invest. Understand. That's what we're trying to help you to do. I hope that this podcast, talking about the initial step and the red flags, just in essence, when you're thinking about your relationship with your attorney and the role of an attorney in representation, that you can kind of understand. That is life advice for you from a divorce attorney. Not divorce advice, process advice, analyzation of another person, of a circumstance, of your role, of the overall dynamic of how this has been created in history, and what role collaborative, out-of-court settlement, mediation, settlement negotiation can have versus litigation. And what you are in essence saying when you're in a litigation courtroom. That is a big part of what people are missing, and I think it's important to define those roles here. So thank you so much for season 3 of Divorce Healthy. I couldn't do it without all of you. And you keep me going. You keep me wanting to help you to know more. I love hearing your feedback because it does help me invest more and more into helping you think the way I would think if I were just a human going through the process that you're going through based on all the information and perspective that I've had all and accumulated all these years. I look forward to talking to you about the rest of the red flags that you may have missed or that you may want to avoid in the future. So tune back in with us for the next one. No, I don't quite know when it's going to be, but it will be soon. Thanks so much. Have a wonderful and amazing day. I believe in you and everything that you could possibly do or achieve, and that whatever you want out of this process that you can achieve, but you have to put your mind to it. You have to write it down and you have to think about it every day. Have an awesome day.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Divorce Healthy, your guide to mastering conflict resolution at home and in the workplace. To inquire about speaking engagements, purchase your copy of Ashley Nicole's book, The Cure for Divorce Culture, or to schedule your private orientation meeting, head to www.anrlaw.com. You can also find us on social media at ANR Law. Find a better way forward right here on Divorce Healthy.